Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India.
How far is astrology true in human life? In the Indian tradition and in so many other traditions, there's a large emphasis on position of the stars, position of the moon, and there's one camp that won't cook breakfast without checking with their astrologer to find out what the most auspicious thing to cook is or time to cook. There's another camp that says, this is rubbish, it doesn't make any sense. The truth actually falls somewhere in between. If you think for a moment simply about high tide and low tide in the ocean. What causes high tide and low tide in the ocean? The moon, exactly. Simply the gravitational pull between the moon and the earth is what changes all of the water in the ocean. It doesn't create just one little wave. It actually shifts, God knows, how many millions of gallons of water from one place to another place. That's a very strong pull. Now, for all the doctors or scientists in the audience, approximately what percent of the human body is water? 70, 75, depends on how old we are. Anywhere between 60 and 90. So the water in our body is much less than the water in the ocean. If I have a bucket of water, if I'm going to take a bath and I fill my bucket and I push it just like I push that glass, what's going to happen to it? It'll barely move, right? It'll shake a little, but barely move. It certainly won't spill the way the glass spilled. Now, if I've got a swimming pool, and I push on the edge of my swimming pool, is it gonna budge? No. And if I push on the sand at the beach, is it gonna move the ocean? No. What if we all pushed on the sand at the beach together? Would we be able to move the ocean? No. So why? Why can me, barely doing anything, spill the glass in my cup and all of us together can't make the water in the ocean move? Because there's so much more water there. So what it makes us understand in our lives and our own bodies is the amount of water in our body is somewhere between the amount in this glass and the amount in a bathtub, depending on how big we are and how much we weigh. But it's not that much. And if the pull of the moon is so strong to move all the water in the ocean, clearly it's going to have an impact on the water in our own bodies. It would be absurd for us to say, this pull is strong enough to move the ocean, but it has no impact on me. So what we know is, yes, we are impacted. We are magnetic creatures. We respond to frequency. We respond to energy. We have electrical impulses. We absolutely pick up energy in the world around us. the fluid in our body responds. So whether it's the moon, whether it's the position of the planets, all of that, what we're looking at is literally a gravitational energetic pull that is exerting different influences on us. There are absolutely times, like if you're going to go swimming, it really helps to know when it's low tide or high tide. It's much more safe and auspicious to swim when it's low tide than when it's high tide. If you want to go look at starfish and sea anemone in the ocean, you're going to want to wait for the tide to go out so you can see them. In the same way in our lives, it's helpful to know metaphorically when there's going to be a low tide or a high tide in our lives. When there's auspicious times, when there's challenging times, when there's going to be a metaphoric tsunami in our inner world. When it's safe to do certain things, auspicious to do certain things, dangerous to do other things. We're not only made up of water. There's a lot else to who we are, physically, emotionally, spiritually. And that's where our free will comes in. So astrology plays a role in the foundation. But our free will, how we act, what we do, is even more important than that. So we use astrology to understand high tides and low tides, but we don't get stuck with it. We don't let it determine our lives. We understand that the power of our free will, the power of our own buddhi, is just as strong. And we use that.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. If someone has cheated on you, a spouse, a loved one, a friend, first of all, how do you deal with that? How do you deal with betrayal? And then on a more philosophical level, what's the karma for the person who cheated? If we say that people get their karmic fruits or their karmic desserts in this life, does that now mean that someone's going to cheat on him or her, or how does that work? Before we worry about what happens to the person who hurt us, let's just talk about the betrayal itself. Because the rest is really sort of in God's hands. We'll come to that. But at the moment, what's most important is, how do we heal? Yes, on some level, it's soothing to try to picture those who have harmed us and hurt us suffering similarly. in terms of the law of karma, but that's not ultimately the highest goal of where we're going. Ultimately, let's talk about what happens to us when we've been cheated on or betrayed. First of all, the most important thing is to remember it's not your fault. People who cheat will always say it's your fault. If you just were giving me what I need, what I want, if you were better in these areas, more in this areas, righter for me in those areas, then I wouldn't have to cheat. And whether they say it verbally or whether it's just implied in the situation, either way, that's the message that most of us internalize is, I was cheated on because there's something lacking in me. And the most important thing to remember is, it's not about you. When people cheat and betray us, it's always about them. That doesn't mean that we may necessarily spend the rest of our lives with our childhood sweethearts. I mean, I can look back on being a teenager and remember the boy in high school I was head over heels in love with, and, you know, in my mind, he was my soulmate, and we were going to be together forever. And the minds and the hearts of particularly very young people tend to be very, very full and very enthusiastic and very emotional and very connected. And that doesn't necessarily mean that the judgments that we make or what we need or what connects us to someone when we're a teenager are necessarily what we're going to actually need in our 30s or 40s or 50s or later in life. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, as the question was asked about cheating and betrayal, about someone who is with someone, whether as a spouse, whether as a boyfriend or girlfriend, whether as a friend, whether as a business partner. Because cheating and betrayal are not only romantic. We can be betrayed by a friend we've gone into business with just as much as we can be betrayed by a spouse or a boyfriend and girlfriend. And in both cases, again, it's not about us. It's about that person feeling so desperate to get something from another being, whether it's physical, sexual, lustful, I had to have an affair with that person, or whether it's financial and career and power oriented in business, whether it's with friends. You tell somebody a secret, you find out they've gone around and told it to others. Well, why do they do that? They do that to get something for themselves. Oh, I've got this great juicy gossip secret. I bet if I share that with these really popular people, they're going to like me. So I've used you, my friend, to get something for myself. And again, whatever it is that we're looking for, whether it's physical, sexual, financial, careers, social, whatever it is, people who cheat on others always do it simply because within them there is a desperation to get something else that they need to cheat on that person in order to get. And what that means is that that person, aside from being dishonest, aside from being untrustworthy, aside from being all of those things that we already know they are, is someone who deeply inside feels that they are lacking in some way. Whether I believe that having sex with someone other than my spouse is going to somehow make me feel better, whether I believe that cheating on my business partner to get more money is going to somehow make me more successful, whatever it is, it's due to a sense within me of lack, of scarcity, of emptiness, of unworthiness, that I need to use someone else to feel better about myself. So when that happens to us, and again, whether it happens romantically, whether it happens in business, whether it happens amongst colleagues or amongst friends, remember, first of all, it is not your fault. No one is driven to cheat because their partner is not pretty enough or handsome enough or sexy enough or whatever all the nonsense that we tell ourselves in our mind. The only reason someone is driven to cheat is because they inside themselves feel that they are lacking. And the person with whom they are cheating, with whom they are having an affair, fills on some level an emptiness that they experience inside. That's the first piece. The second piece becomes, okay, so we know it's not about us, it's about them. Now what? Well, now what varies from situation to situation. There's no right answer to now what. Some people may decide to leave the relationship. Some people may decide to stay in the relationship, that the relationship is bigger than whatever temporary betrayal of trust someone did. Again, whether it's a friend, whether it's a loved one. You tell someone something, they told someone, they betrayed your trust, but maybe you've been friends for 30 years, they've been your best friend since childhood, you realize, okay, they shouldn't have betrayed me, but I'm not going to ruin the relationship over it. Or you've got a really good marriage, for whatever reason, in a time of stress, in a time of drifting apart, a spouse had an affair, wasn't right. It's going to take some work to repair the relationship, but you may look at the relationship and say, you know what? Our marriage is bigger, is deeper, is worth more than just this one night or one weekend or one week event. But there's no right answer to that. There's no answer that I sitting here can tell you, yes, you should forgive, no, you shouldn't forgive. Yes, you should leave, no, you shouldn't leave. It depends on the individual situation. But what's most important, whether you choose to stay in the relationship or not, is we have to forgive. We have to let go. Even if you choose not to keep the relationship, you have to let go. Otherwise, and this brings us into the karma aspect, otherwise what happens is we literally spend our lives being the jailer of that person. You are a cheat. You are a liar. You betrayed me. And we do not let go. And in our minds, the tragic part is in our minds we don't let go because we need them to feel really bad. We need them to repent more than they've already repented. We need them to hurt and suffer more than they've already hurt and suffered because they've caused us to hurt and suffer. And in some sort of warped corner of our brain, we believe that by withholding our forgiveness, we're going to manufacture repentance in that person. We're going to manufacture deep regret in that person. And it never happens. The only one we keep hurting is ourself. So we have to forgive. It doesn't mean it's okay. It doesn't mean we say to them, yeah, sure, go out and do it again next week. It doesn't even mean that we may decide to stay married to them or stay friends with them or stay business partners. But for our own spiritual growth and for our own peace in life, we have to forgive whatever someone has done to us. They've cheated us, they've betrayed us, they've abused us, they've abandoned us. We have to forgive, not because, and this bears repeating, not because what they did was okay. Forgiveness does not mean we condone the action. Forgiveness simply says, I refuse to be chained for the rest of my life to what happened. If I don't forgive, what I'm saying is, take this chain, attach it to my gut, to my heart, and then attach it, not even to that person, but to the act that they did. Because chances are they also did a lot of nice things in their life. But we're not attaching the chain to that. We're attaching the chain to the act of betrayal, to the act of abuse, to the act of abandonment. And we're saying, I am going to go through my life chained to what just happened. And wherever I go, like prisoners, like slaves, I'm going to carry at the end of that chain this very, very heavy weight. And we believe in illusion that that is actually making the other person repent. But it's not. People move on. Think about all the times in our life that we've hurt someone else. Is there anyone sitting here who hasn't ever hurt someone else? I mean, can any of us really look at our lives and say, I've never hurt someone? We may never have done it purposely. But all of us, at some point in our life, knowingly, unknowingly, purposely, not purposely, have hurt someone else. But we move on. Doesn't mean we feel good about it. Doesn't mean we want to do it again. But we're able to move on. The person who betrayed you will move on. The person who cheated on you will move on. You attaching this chain with a weight to your gut so you can't eat, so you get sick, to your heart, so you can't love and you can't trust not only them, but you can't trust someone else, hurts no one but yourself. So we forgive simply to cut that chain out of our own hearts. And then lastly, it brings us to the question of karma. They're going to get their karma. We don't have to have this chain in order to make sure they get their karma. The law of karma is scientific. Whatever we do, there's a repercussion. It's not like the, you know, code of Hammurabi, the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. If I betray you, somebody's going to betray me. It's not exactly like that. It's not exactly like a boomerang that I send out and it comes back with equal force. But there is a very specific repercussion to every act. And if what I do is cause pain to another person, I'm going to get that. I'm going to get that pain. May not be exactly the same way, but I'm going to get That type of pain, that sense of my heart being broken, that sense of being betrayed. Because that's the law of karma. But the law of karma does not require us to keep its books. Until and unless God comes down to any of us and says, could you do me a favor? I'm really busy right now and things are just slipping my mind. Would you mind keeping the books for me? Until and unless that happens, the law of karma is pretty perfect. It's also very scientific. So it doesn't need us to do it. Just like if you plant an apple seed, you don't have to stand there and keep reminding it, remember you're an apple. Remember you're an apple. Remember, no oranges. It's an apple seed. Of course, it's going to become an apple tree. And when someone has planted that seed of karma, they're going to get the fruits. We don't have to stand over it and make sure that it bears the right type of fruit. Pooja Swamiji gives a beautiful example of this. He says, you know, that person is already in jail because of what they've done. They were actually already in jail before they did it. That's what made them do it. People only hurt us when they're already in pain. So they were already in jail. Now they're in jail because of what they've done. Sitting out a sentence of their karmic fruits. But if we don't forgive and we don't let go, it's like saying, I want to sit in this jail with you. I'm going to sit there also in jail and make sure you don't get out a day early. Make sure they keep you in isolation. Make sure the guard remembers to lock your door. We don't need to do it. We need to be free.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. Are people who believe in God more successful than people who don't believe in God? Yes, the easy answer is yes. But it's important to clarify what we mean by success. When I was growing up, there was a very, very popular comic strip that came in the newspaper every day called Calvin and Hobbes. And one of my favorite moments of Calvin and Hobbes was Calvin was leaving out cookies for Santa Claus. And Hobbes's pet tiger says to him, "But I thought you don't believe in Santa Claus. Why are you leaving cookies out for him?" And Calvin says, "Well, I figure that if by chance I'm wrong, wouldn't want him to get angry. He said, if I'm right, then it's just another plate of cookies I get to eat tomorrow morning anyway. He said, so I sort of figure it's a win-win situation. And I share that because when we think about success and the concept of believing in God and what its relationship to success might be, it is not the equivalent of, well, I might as well believe because should he be there, I wouldn't want him not to bestow blessings of success on me. Therefore, in a win-win analysis, I'm going to believe. Not like that. In fact, in just a moment of digression, one of the points that Pooja Swamiji makes so frequently when we're talking about pujas and rituals and all of the things that are done for God, quote unquote, as though God actually needed our ghee or our rice or our flowers. I mean, he's created it all as though he really needs us to give it back to him. And what Pooja Swamiji always emphasizes is that the whole point of the rituals is to make us spiritual. It's not ritual for ritual's sake. It's not that God is somehow actually happier with people who throw rice in a fire than people who don't throw rice in a fire. It's all about connecting us to God. That being the end, not the means to the end. It's not, oh, well, I'll connect to God so that I might get that car I've always wanted, or that job I always wanted, or that success. The connection to God is actually the end in and of itself, not the means to success. And that brings us back to the definition of success. Are people who believe in God richer than people who don't? I don't think so. Are a greater percentage of CEOs or presidents believers than non-believers? Probably not. So when we're talking about success, we don't mean believe in God and you'll get your raise tomorrow. When I say yes to the question, are people who believe in God more successful than those who don't? What I mean is something deeper. Why do we want success anyway? I mean, take anyone on any path, whatever they're moving toward, whether it's business, whether it's some other profession, whether it's Hollywood or Bollywood, whatever sphere we might be in, and say to them, why do you want to attain that highest level of success? And inevitably what you'll get is, so then I'll be happy. It may not be immediate. They may say, so that I make more money. Okay, well, why do you want to make more money? So that I can buy all of the things that I want. So you may have to go through a few steps before you get to the bottom line of, so then I will be happy. Nobody says, I want to be CEO so that I'll be miserable. Nobody says, I want to be CEO so that I too can have to take pills to fall asleep at night. It's, I want to be that because then I'll have the power. Well, what'll you do when you have the power? When I have the power, I'll get to make the decisions I want to make, and then I'll be happy. So it all eventually boils down to, and then I will be happy. Now, what we do know is that people who believe in God are healthier emotionally. We know they're healthier spiritually, obviously, but actually healthier emotionally, healthier psychologically, and therefore, by definition, happier than people who don't. We also know that they are healthier physically. And if you've ever been sick, even if in general you're a pretty happy person, being sick tends to put a little bit of a damper on your happiness, at least temporarily. Even if it's just a cold or a flu, I know so many of us get it, and we may be very, very independent, very, very self-sufficient. You get a little fever and suddenly it's like, Mom, you know, like, who's going to take care of me? And so even just a tiny, tiny little blip on the health radar is enough to send many of us into that not quite as happy as I could be moment. So we know that people who have faith, and this is, I'm saying this literally from a scientific standpoint, they've done lots of research at places like Duke, Dartmouth, Princeton, you know, top universities in the West, on literally how people who are religious, who are spiritual, who have faith in God, actually are healthier, actually live longer, actually have a much, much lower rate of illness, of disease, of a second heart attack, of all of these markers that the different institutions and hospitals have used to judge. So what we know is that belief in God, and no, it doesn't matter what name, what form, how you connect to God, what religion you have, all that matters is that you are connected. Being a member of your church or of your temple or of your synagogue isn't enough. It doesn't provide any inoculation against any of the illnesses. You've got to actually go. You actually have to show up. So on the real markers of success in life are happiness, our level of contentment, our health, our relationships to ourselves, to each other. We know that people who are spiritual do much better. And the reason for that, it's not that somehow belief in God is, you know, the best multivitamin and it just, you know, it gives you more than vitamin C gives you or is somehow a tonic. What it is that stress, emotional stress, psychological stress, fear, anger, longing, a sense of not having what you want in life. This is the stuff that misery is made of. And when we are deeply connected to God, and again, it doesn't matter by what name or form we connect with the divine, when we're deeply connected, it's like an anchor. Things happen in life. The waves go up and down. But our boat doesn't go up and down because we're anchored, we're grounded, we're connected into something that is much deeper, much fuller, much more fulfilling than the raise we got or didn't get, the promotion we got or didn't get, the insult that someone said to us or didn't say to us, the traffic, the rudeness of the lady who checked us out. All these things that tend to make most of our moods go up and down and therefore our adrenaline levels go up and down, and therefore our emotional, psychological, mental, physical health go up and down. That stuff doesn't do it to us anymore. Because we're so grounded in something deep. You know, it's like we always talk about the waves on the surface of the ocean, and how if you stay on the surface, inevitably your life is going to go up and down. But if you connect deeply, if you go down into the depths of the ocean, you're not impacted by what's going on the surface. And in the same way, it's not that spiritual people don't get fired. It's not that spiritual people get all the raises or promotions, or that somehow traffic parts like the Red Sea for people who are spiritual. It's that it doesn't impact us inside in a way that impacts our level of joy and peace and contentment, and that therefore we don't judge our lives like that. I'll end this question just by sharing a beautiful teaching from a wonderful, wonderful divine saint who used to live just across from us in Rishikesh and unfortunately passed away last year. But he always said, the definition of success that really matters has nothing to do with how much you make, what your job is, what part of town you live in. The only definition of success that matters is how you respond to the inevitable times when the universe does not act the way you think it should. Success is how you respond to the inevitable times when the universe does not act the way you think it should. And the only way to have control over our responses is through spirituality. It's not about willpower. It's not about discipline. That's behavior management. I mean, really, you want to go through 80 or 90 or 100 years of life trying to enforce behavior management on yourself? Don't yell. Don't get upset. I mean, you could do it. It's certainly better than yelling and screaming. But it's not the highest possibility. Don't punch a hole through a wall. Don't beat that person. Don't slap them. I mean, yeah, we could do that. But ultimately, wouldn't it be nice to not even have the instinct to punch our hand through a wall? Wouldn't it be nice not even to have the instinct to slap somebody or to yell? So it's not just a matter of this, you know, death grip of willpower I have over my own impulses, but that I don't even have the impulse anymore. You know, it's like when you first become a vegetarian, for many people, for some of us it's purely visceral, but for many people it's a decision that they make because they know it's the right moral and ethical decision to make. But for a while, they have to literally keep reminding themselves and holding themselves to don't eat the meat. But eventually you get to a point where it's not even food, it's not even an option, it wouldn't even occur to you. Those options stop being even options, and you don't have to use your willpower to not order the hamburger. You don't even think about it. And in the same way with spirituality, with that connection, it's no longer about having to remind ourselves not to get angry, or remind ourselves not to punch, or remind ourselves to act with love and compassion. It's just what flows. So, back to the original, yes, they are much more successful on every level.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
When I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for taking you to your therapies, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati, and thanks for coming back and joining us for more of inspiration and transformation.
He said, I feel such a heightened vibration being near Pujaswamiji. What's causing that? Is that surrender? If you stand in front of an air conditioner, do you feel cold? Yeah. If you stand in front of a heater, you feel hot? Now, your surrender to the cold air or your surrender to the hot air compared to doing this obviously makes it able to impact and run through the body more, but it's not required. All you have to do is have your sensory neurons functional. When you are in the presence of really the great masters, the energy is so much that yes, if you surrender to it, its ability to impact you is much stronger. I mean, you could get into Ganga and try to withstand the current. On the other hand, should you choose to surrender to it, it's going to make your journey downriver not only much more pleasant, but much more effective. If your goal is to get into Ganga and to go, surrendering to the flow is going to make that journey much smoother, much quicker, much more pleasant. You're not going to have your muscles fatigued at the end and be exhausted. But you don't have to surrender to the current in order for it to impact you. The enlightened masters have, I mean, everybody is energetic. We're all energetic beings. If you look at any of us, we look very solid. We look like we're just flesh and bones and muscles and skin. But if you look at any of us under an electron microscope, what you're going to see is whirling electrons. We're all energetic. There's now incredible new research showing that they actually can do a brain scan with a machine that's not even touching your head. Most of us think of a brain scan where they hook up all the electrodes and then you get to see your brain waves. Well, imagine the exact same thing, except the electrodes aren't touching your head. Which is phenomenal, because what it means is that the power of our thought, they haven't done it yet from your arms and legs and chest, but the power of our thought is so much that it can actually give readouts inches from our head. We're all energetic. We all are emitting frequencies, which is why in each other's presence, I mean, aside from the enlightened masters for just a moment, in different people's presence, we feel differently. Most of us don't have the blessing to interact with enlightened masters on a day-to-day basis, but we certainly experience being with some people, and it feels really right. There's some people in their presence. You feel like your own inner frequency is enhanced. You think better, you feel better. Energetically, it just feels more right. There's other people you're with, and it feels like more work to be in their presence. The frequency, there's something about the frequency that's just off. Now you take that and you take it to a whole new level. And you put yourself in the presence of someone who is emitting such energy that, yeah, of course, I mean, since we're energy and we're whirling electrons and we're frequency, that which is coming at us is impacting us. Whether it's just the guy in the cubicle next to yours, whether it's a loved one, whether it's a pet, whether it's a tree in your backyard. But then when you take it with the masters, it takes it from that element of simply sort of good vibrations, bad vibrations that we talk about, to actually the spiritual equivalent of standing in front of an air conditioner or standing in front of a heater or being in a river with a current. You would have to be so insulated spiritually not to feel it, that it would be like standing in front of the air conditioner in a down jacket. Yeah, you might not feel it. So what it means is that you're open. And if you can also muster the surrender, then what it does is it takes that experience of feeling the energy and actually allows it to change you. It's one thing to just be in its presence. It's another thing to actually let it impact you and actually let it change you. And that's ultimately what the whole point is. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.